This episode is sponsored by 10X Stage Agency. 10X Stage Agency deliver exceptional talent to the most important stages in the world. People like Dean Graziosi, Ray Higdon, and so many more. They are the first and only agency focused entirely on building impact and revenues for speakers. Their driven, experienced stage agency team has the relationships and the data-driven expertise to get you on the stages where your audience is assembled. They will make sure your voice and impact are amplified on the stages that are the ideal for you. The proof is in the numbers. They don't just talk the talk, their speakers are getting real results. Over 1,000 stages booked in last year, 3 times clients added in 18 months, and endless national stage opportunities. So what are you waiting for? You can go to 10xstageagency.com and find out more. As famously said by Henry Ford, when everything seems to be going against you, remember that the airplane takes off against the wind, not with it. And for those of you who have always been thinking of how you can actually live the life you deserve and not the life you have, then this episode is for you. Hi, my name is Rayson Chu and I'm your host for The Regacy Show. And today it is our honor and pleasure to have this amazing and inspiring entrepreneur. And his name is none other than Ben Murison. Ben is the co-founder of Humble CEO and Business Mentor. He was born in 1985 in Romania at a time when the country was under communist rule. His family escaped before the revolution and landed in an Austrian refugee camp in 1990. After immigrating to Canada and eventually reuniting with his siblings, Ben developed a passion for life and a gratitude mindset. He dreamt of building an empire, motivating, entertaining, and investing in other people. Today, he has developed the largest private mortgage company in southwestern Ontario with a mission to serve young families and make home ownership possible. Well, without further ado, let's welcome this amazing gentleman into the house. Woohoo! All right.
Hi, Ben. Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. It's really my honor and pleasure to have you here. How have you been, man?
Good. Thank you, brother.
Oh, you're most welcome. And I'm really happy and excited to have you here. And of course, I would like to thank today's sponsor, which is our 10X Stage Agency. Without you guys, I wouldn't have known Ben and the other amazing people that's coming on board in this platform, in this podcast, where we're going to talk a lot. And of course, 10X Stage Agency is actually something that Pete Vargas has actually built. And this dream team, he calls, is really something that, you know, they make the dreams of the speakers and their event planners a reality. And without that, I wouldn't be able to speak to Ben today. And I'm really, really grateful for this mini collaboration between 10X Stage Agency together with Regacy as well. And wow, this is something that I've never thought would happen, and it's really happening right now. So I would like to actually ask Ben, can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So who I am? Benjamin Mureșan. I go by Ben Humble because all immigrants have a nickname, don't they? So yeah. I go by a nickname. It's easier for North Americans to pronounce it and say it. I'm an immigrant from Romania. I was born in communism. I'm the oldest of 9 kids and grew up in Canada, just working for everything. My parents worked 2-3 jobs. My dad eventually became a pastor of a church in Canada, got his doctorate in theology. And I grew up as a musician, always wanted to be in music. And eventually that led me down the road of entrepreneurship, started doing real estate investing. Now we have masterminds and communities, and we help people grow, you know, companies in different fields. So today I get to travel. I get to live life on my own terms. I've got a beautiful wife the last 14 years. And what I'm the most thankful for is the gratitude that I get from God every single day. Just being able to live in abundance, being able to inspire people to just live their best life, live on purpose every single day, not by default. So that's a short, short synopsis of who I am.
Ah, nice. Okay. Wow. you know, being an immigrant and going to a foreign country where you have no friends, or probably you have some family because you manage to find them. After that, you get together with them. But, you know, it's really tough because different culture, different, I would say, different government system, especially Romania was communism, and then you went to capitalism, which is like a whole new ball game for you. And it's really something that I would say that you wouldn't have thought that you would become a self-made millionaire over the next, like, what, 10 years of your life. So, Ben, before we dive into the main focus of our interview, our listeners would love to get to know you a bit better. So can you tell us a bit about your backstory on how did you become an entrepreneur and so becoming Ben Humble?
Sure. I was a musician growing up, and I went to music school. And about halfway through music school, my teacher said, "You are the most talented but laziest kid that we have." And I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah, you have all this talent in you, but you're not working hard for it." And she said, "You're never going to become a high school music teacher if you don't go ahead and work harder." And I said, I didn't realize I was in this program to be a high school music teacher. I thought this was a performance program. And I realized halfway through school, I was in the wrong program. So I dropped out. And I did whatever an immigrant kid could do, which is clean. I started a cleaning janitorial service company. I started cleaning and scrubbing floors and doing all this stuff. And I just would go anywhere to get a customer. Whoever would hire me to go do work, I'd be there doing it. And after a couple years of doing this, I started looking for better ways and better ways. And somebody said, "You got to own some real estate." I said, "Real estate? How's that work?" They said, "Easy. You got to go buy $1 million worth of real estate and have these people called tenants or customers pay it off. And when they pay it off, you're a millionaire." And I said, "Hey, that's got to be a better way. That's got to be better than me trying to clean floors." So I got into real estate at the age of 21. I bought my very first duplex. I was actually one of the people that was in my business community, sold me a duplex, helped me get the financing. And I never forget, I moved into this property at 21 years old. I moved into this property and I was paying $156 a month plus utilities to live in my own property. So that led to a second one and a third one. And by the time I got married at 23, I had 3 properties, 5 tenants, and I was living rent free. That was the start of real estate. That was the start of entrepreneurial. But I got into business because I wanted to play my music. I wanted to never be told again, "You're never going to make it to this." I wanted to take control of my own financial future. And I wanted to get back to playing music and doing the things I loved. So the way to do that was to get serious about business and make sure that I could have enough revenue and income that I wouldn't have to rely on anybody else again.
Wow. Okay. Wow. But how much did you have to save in order to actually buy your first duplex? Because I'm pretty sure, you know, being somebody that is like cleaning floors, scrubbing mats and all, you guys don't earn a lot, right, in a sense, at the start?
No, we didn't. And it wasn't about saving. It was about being creative. See, the very first deal I did was a creative finance deal. I went to this person who was a mortgage broker, and here in the North America, Canada, the US, we have people who lend money. They're called private lenders. So we have the bank, the institutions, private lenders, hard money lenders. And there are people that will lend against the property, people that will lend against you, your personal credit score, your job, your income. There's all kinds of lenders out there. And I had to learn this, but I was able to get some creative financing done through a private lender and actually buy the property without a whole lot of cash. I just paid for the closing cost, which was a couple $1,000. So I got creative. And this is a lesson that I live my whole life. When you don't have the money, get creative. Find a way. There's always another way to do something. But most of us, we only know the default way, which is to go to the bank to save 20% down and to buy the property. So this is the power of capitalism, is creativity. And because I'm a musician, for me, creativity comes maybe more easily than for other people. So that's how I got into my first place, was for about a couple $1,000 in closing costs.
Wow. Okay. Well, interesting. Well, this is something that I believe many of us would like to learn more, and, you know, to actually know how we can actually grow our, in terms of not just our wealth, but also at the same time getting our own house at such a very creative way. And of course, you know, while you were actually building your business and of course getting this multiple houses and all in business terms, I'm pretty sure you must have met some failures along the way, right? So how has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success? And do you have a favorite failure of yours?
I believe life is a series of failing. And so long as mm-hmm. you never become a failure, you can keep moving forward. I fail at things every single day. We're failing right now at things. And by okay. failing, I believe in the power of failing, but then optimizing, failing, but then learning, and then optimizing, and failing, and learning, and optimizing. It's a pattern. And if you're unwilling to fail, I don't think you'll get very far. So one of my favorite failures, if I have to go to that, was I, you know, when I started at 23, I decided I was going to try to trade stocks. I said, I'm going to try to trade stocks and options and all this stuff. So I remember trading options, and I bought an option trading course, and I decided to start trading options, see if I can make money. And I got into day trading. And if you've ever done day trading before, it's probably the most manic, depressive type of investing you can do. It's in and out and emotions up and down and sideways. Now, I remember one very, very frustrating day after a whole lot of back and forth. You know, I lost about $40,000 in one day. And that was the most frustrating day of my life. I pounded my table and I said, I will never be here ever again. From that moment forward, I took money management very seriously. I became what I would call a steward of capital. The Bible talks about stewardship. So I would become a steward of money. I would take care of money. I would treat it as though it's been entrusted to me. And since that day, I've managed money in a stewardship principle. So I don't look at it like it's my money. I look like I'm managing it on behalf of my creator. So by doing that, that one lesson, that one principle has been guiding me in managing money for years now. That was one of my favorite, most pivotal failures. It was a defining moment in the way that I manage money. And I'm thankful for that experience. Although it was incredibly frustrating, it allowed me to create some deep conviction about my future, my behavior around money. So that one experience shaped a lot for me.
Oh, I see. Wow. That's definitely tough. I mean, like losing so much money in a day is it's scary, especially when you were, you know, starting out in day trading. I'm pretty sure it was something that you didn't expect as well. And the market has always been so volatile in a sense, especially ever since COVID-19 hit all of us in a sense, right? And you said something very interesting, which was to actually be a steward in terms of your money. So how did you manage your money like a steward? And what's the strategy like?
So from that moment forward, I decided, my wife and I, we decided to live and budget every single dollar that came in the house. So every single dollar, we would sit down and create a monthly budget, and then we would reconcile our budget every 30 days. What that allowed us to do was really understand where our money was going. We developed the discipline around money management because we were responsible for managing the few dollars that we had. So we created a philosophy. It was called spend one, save one. We would save an entire paycheck, her paycheck, because she had a stable job in the financial sector. And we would try to live off of my paycheck. So hers would be investing or saving. Mine would be under just living. And that philosophy allowed us to save her entire paycheck for years and years and years, which gave us a very, very strong ability to invest in deals and opportunities when they became available. So from that stewardship principle came budgeting, came the discipline of making strong financial decisions, and then living way below our means and saving an entire paycheck. That was a secret ingredient for us in positioning ourselves to be able to start acquiring real estate, which we did a couple of years later.
Wow. Okay. Nice. Nice. Oh, wow. For those of you who are tuning in, be it on Facebook, LinkedIn Live, YouTube Live, or even if you are listening it via Spotify or iTunes, you can try this method out, which is save one, spend one. And this is something that I'm going to give it a try. Wow. This is something very unique. I've never thought of this until you actually shared this. And of course, I actually read your book, From Communism to Capitalism, which is very inspiring. And you guys should also go and check it out in his website as well. You can go and find out. And this book is really inspiring in terms of like not just, it's not just about his biography, but also his principles, his living values that he has been practicing every single day, even to today. And you guys should go and check it out as well. And like, you know, I was reading this book and I saw this principle, and man, it's great that you are sharing this as well. And I wanted to ask you, I'm pretty sure you love reading as well, and as you are an avid reader as well, plus you're an author, can you share with us like what are 1 to 3 books that have greatly influenced your life?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I read different types of books, so you get standard answers on finance or business, and you know, a couple of my favorite books that have been very impactful to me was Blue Ocean Strategy. And this book was all about when you're thinking about your business and even your life, what are you doing to stand out? What are you doing to have a voice? What are you doing to be unique in the marketplace? I think far too many people in business or real estate, we don't really know what product we're selling. And if our product is in the same red pool of competition as everybody else, there's nothing unique. There's no unique selling proposition. This has helped me in every business and every product launch that I've done, is understanding that we must be unique. We must be different. We must be in such a way a unique solution for whatever that problem is. So Blue Ocean Strategy is a book that I really do appreciate a lot. There's a whole host of other ones, but another one that really comes to mind for me on a lifestyle is the 4-Hour Work Week, which I read years ago. I'm sure you've read that book by Tim Ferriss. And I took away one key principle from there, and that was the big domino theory. And the big domino theory is to spend time doing nothing. He used to walk his dog for weeks and do nothing, but think about what was that one big thing, the one big domino that he could knock over that would knock over a whole bunch of other small dominoes. I've taken that principle and turned it into my kind of time management ethos. I apply a Pareto principle to everything, 80-20 rule. What's the one big thing that I need to do this week that will remove so many other little things? If you want to master time, I work about 15 hours a week on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I have Fridays off typically, and Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays are music days. And it's by implementing and applying the Pareto principle in your life. So that to me was a really powerful thing from Tim Ferriss's book. And there's another book, it's called Man's Search for Meaning. And I believe that all of us, by Viktor Frankl, and all of us are looking for, I think there's 3 layers to what we deem success. There's financial success and stability, which we all seek and live in scarcity around money until we have it. Once we have that, we typically give up the next layer of success, which is called time success. So we don't have time freedom. So financial freedom, time freedom. And then the third freedom is freedom to choose and live in purpose. And that to me is where search of meaning becomes the most valid, is what are the activities and behaviors that you use in life, and are they related to money, time, or purpose? My life is about purpose. I believe in impact over income these days. But I have been extremely blessed and fortunate where my business, my activities, my mindset has allowed me to create financial and time freedom. So now I get to do the things that I believe that are designed for me versus the things that I have to do just to create provision in my life.
Okay. Well, those are really great books that you have mentioned. And of course, just now you actually mentioned about purpose, or I would say impact over income, right? So I'm just curious, like for those people who are striving for purpose and impact, how will that actually lead them to their income? Because there are people who are really purpose, who are purpose driven, but yet the income doesn't come. So how could they make those things coincide together in a sense?
Yeah, so there's one key word here. When we seek purpose, we're typically willing to invest in things that are intangible, like relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're seeking money, you're actually pursuing transactions, not relationships, right? So when you're seeking purpose, you'll tend to gravitate towards these intangible qualities, relationships. You'll gravitate towards perhaps skills that you can't monetize. You'll gravitate towards experiences that you can't necessarily compute their immediate value. These activities, what they do is they expand your awareness. Most of the problem around money is that people's awareness is too low. I'm in real estate investing. If you think that real estate investing is you buying one house one time, once per year, making $10,000 one time, that if that's your awareness around real estate investing, then that's going to be the TAM or the total addressable market opportunity in your mind. When I hang out with people who will buy thousands of houses per year, they raise millions of dollars of capital, they have swarms of employees doing the work, and they're able to operate from an executive position and look at their company much like a chessboard. And then you have to change the awareness around what's possible. And I believe when people chase money, they're basically running away from scarcity. When people chase time, still running away from scarcity. But when people chase and they pursue purpose, they're really pursuing freedom and opportunity. I believe real opportunity comes from purpose. Everything else is running away from scarcities. It's trying to cope with the fact that you don't have enough provision in your life, not enough food, shelter, or perceived food and shelter. So I believe the best mind game happens in the purpose. Until you finally raise your awareness, until you finally see the full picture and you gain greater perspective, well, then you're just a rat in your own maze and you'll never know.
True, true. Well, I really love what you have mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, we are supposed to be not supposed to be chasing after the time and the money in a sense, because when we are chasing them, they are somehow or rather running away from us in a sense, right? Because when we are chasing after money, it doesn't mean we will get that million next moment. It might be like, well, so many years later, then we can get that. But when we are chasing after our purpose, then opportunities will come in place, and you'll be surprised by the abundance that God and whatever that we believe in are supplying us in a sense, because we are living a much more fulfilled life rather than, you know, being so empty, chasing after money, after paycheck from, you know, different sources in a sense, right?
Yeah, I believe God opens doors for those that are willing to pursue and walk through them. I'm a Christian. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. God will open doors for you if you're willing to have the faith to move forward. But the intangibles in life versus the tangibles, like intrinsic value of a painting is, you know, the bare materials, the ink, the sketch, like those are the bare intrinsic qualities of something. And you could say, this is what it's worth. It's a commodity. But when somebody takes their God-given talent and they paint a beautiful, beautiful Picasso or Rembrandt or something, and that sells for millions and millions and millions of dollars, all of that is extrinsic value. None of that can be quantified as intrinsic value to that raw material. So in my life, people who chase money and who chase time are chasing the intrinsic commodities. When you chase purpose, you chase the extrinsic pursuits, the things that have real impact and meaning, but they happen in the spiritual realm, they happen in the mental realm, they happen in the extrinsic side of life. But most people don't live in the extrinsic. They live in the tangible intrinsic components because they're living in some version of scarcity or fear.
Okay. I get where you're coming from. Wow, nice. And you know, after speaking with you for just this 20 minutes, I realized that you are really, really knowledgeable and wise in many things. And I'm pretty sure you didn't start off this way, in a sense. You started off with mentors, am I right? Mm-hmm. So can you share with us, like, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from your mentors? Because I read the book From Communism to Capitalism, I noticed that you were actually very grateful with these two mentors of yours, and I'm pretty sure they have shared some amazing stuff to you. So can you share with us, like, what's the best piece of advice that they have given?
Yeah, so my greatest mentor is my own father. This is a man at 27 years old who had five children and made a decision to escape communism. On foot, we landed in a refugee camp, and it was months until we were reunited as a family. This is a man who started in a village of less than 15 people and got a doctorate in theology. So this man has been my primary mentor in life. And like any child, observing his behavior and actions has been more profound to me than any word he's ever said. the observation of how a man behaves, how he treats his wife, how he lives his life, how he pursues excellence. Those are the things that are the most impactful to me. But it comes back to what our faith says. The greatest mentorship I've ever received is love God, love people. You don't have to like people. You don't have to like their activities. You don't have to like their behaviors, but accept them, love them. I have learned to love people even if I don't like people. I have, because that opens up your heart to gratitude. My ethos going forward is to give, gratitude, growth. Three G's, give, gratitude, growth. That's the ethos, love. Love God, love people. Like that to me is such an easy way of living life. I mean, I should say it's a simple way of living life. It's not always going to be easy to love people even when they falter, to love people when they criticize you, to love people when they take advantage of you. Like it's not easy, but I believe that is so powerful. And I'll give you another one. It's this: starve the flesh and feed the spirit. Now here's what that means. We have this fleshly desire to eat a cheeseburger even though we're 40 pounds overweight, right? We want to watch Netflix for 6 hours and not do the work we're supposed to do. That's the flesh talking. That's the desire talking. When you starve the flesh and do good, meaning feeding the spirit. Hey, I don't want to get up at 4:15 every day and go to the gym, but I do. I get up at 4:15 every day and go to the gym at 5 o'clock. The reason I do that because I do good. And if I do good over and over and over again, and I starve the feelings, I remove the feelings and I just do good, eventually I'll have the fulfillment that the feelings are trying to deliver to me. See, feelings are an imposter. We all want fulfillment. We all want to do good. You want to make $1 million before you're 30 years old like I did? Do good. Build a business. Learn about business. Get a mentor. These are doing good. Feeling good, talking about business all day, hanging out with your friends and getting drunk. Those things make you feel good, but they don't do good. So one of the greatest pieces is that starve the flesh and feed the spirit. Feed the things that do good in life and not the things that feel good in life.
Nice. Well, okay. So I'm going to start starving the flesh and what's that again?
Feed the spirit.
Yeah.
Feed the spirit. That's right.
Nice, nice, nice. Okay. Well, I'm going to starve the flesh and feed the spirit. And of course, you know, just keep doing good. And not just so for the sake of just feeling good, but making sure the world is a better place in a sense. Wow, I really love that piece of advice that your dad has actually given to you. And wow, amazing, you know, getting to know about your story, like, oh, you have to go through so much of pain. Wow, it's something that I never experienced before, but well, hearing from your perspective, it's really something that's truly inspiring. And I'd like to ask you this. If you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
If I could have a gigantic billboard anywhere, what would it say and why? What a fantastic question. What a fantastic question. I would have a billboard that says humility is a superpower. Yeah. Humility is a superpower. Because I believe that I wear this hat. This is a reminder. This is my armor. It's easy for young men to develop pride. It's easy for young men to develop an ego. It's easy for men and even women to think only of themselves and be selfish. It's easy to run away from problems. It's easy to think you know everything. But I've heard it from someone that there's two kinds of people, those that are ignorant and arrogant and those that are ignorant and humble. Either way, you're ignorant. Either way, you don't know. I would rather be humble. I would rather have humility. I would rather ask great questions, lower my ego, be vulnerable with people, be willing to always be a student, even though in some things I am a master. But humility is my superpower. It allows me to grow every single day because pride did not. Ego stopped me many times from learning lessons. It stopped me from building and cultivating relationships. It stopped me from true internal growth. But humility, dropping my ego, saying I'm sorry, saying thank you, saying please, and that right here is a superpower. So humility isn't a weakness. Humility is a secret weapon for growth if you know how to use it.
True. I agree. Like, you know, when you are humble, you are willing to be open and lower yourself to those who are higher than you. And of course, you are also able to, I would say, level the whole playing field with your peers and everyone else, because you won't be, I would say, so arrogant enough to say, hey, I'm higher than you, I'm more superior than you, you know, you have to listen to me. That's not something that we would like to experience, right? So I really love your tagline, humility is the superpower. And it's really something that I believe this generation of people, especially the Gen Y and Gen Zs, should actually practice this, because humility is something that it doesn't show weakness, but it's a strength. And it's like what you mentioned, a secret weapon towards growth and to your own success.
Mm.
And just now you were saying about questions, right? So, you know, I read your book, From Communism to Capitalism, that in order to free yourself from status quo, you actually have 9 questions to ask yourself. Can you share with us, like, what are these 9 questions that you ask yourself so that, you know, you can be more purposeful and like I mentioned earlier, free yourself from your status quo?
I'll paraphrase, because I know there's a lot in that book here, but I'm going to kind of paraphrase this down for you a little bit. So I think that is something really important for all of us is, what do you want? My mentor used to ask me this question a lot. What do you actually want? Because every time we're pursuing something, we say, what do we want? What are we trying to achieve? And then more importantly, why do you want it? What's the trigger for you? See, I believe that most people will give up or fail. In business, the statistic is over 95% of people will quit or fail within the first 5 years. What is it inside of you that's going to drive you to keep moving forward? So what exactly do you want? Be specific. SMART goals. Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound. SMART goals. Why do you want it? The other thing is this. What are you prepared to give up? What are you prepared to sacrifice? Because there will be a sacrifice. What are you prepared to give up? Then the next one is, who will you become? That's a great paraphrase. Who will you become in this process? I heard a speaker say one time that I want to double who I am every 12 months. My effectiveness, my health, my relationship, that by the time I'm 65 years old, that man is so much greater than who I am today, I almost can't recognize him. Isn't that a powerful quote, right? Yeah. I want to double who I am every 12 months. So I believe in this principle. I believe in pursuing excellence in every area of your life, in your fitness, in your marriage, in your faith, in your business, in your passions. Pursue that. I think I'm an extremely intentional person. I don't live in low intentions. I love people who are highly intentional, because those people to me are in pursuit of things. And the pursuit of things, I heard it said that what makes us human is our need for progress. What makes us human is our need for progress. The pursuit of daily progress is what makes us human, what makes us happy. So that's kind of a paraphrase of the 9 different thoughts. Who are you? What do you want? Why do you want it? And who will you become? Who will you become in the process?
Well, love this. I mean, in order to be where you are right now, I'm pretty sure you have actually read a lot of books. You have attended a lot of events, conferences, and all. So I'm pretty sure, you know, this is something that everyone would want to know as well. Like, how did you do it? Like, how did you actually make yourself into this stage where you're able to do whatever you deserve, and instead of just what you have?
I love that. Do what you deserve. It started in a room. I was in a room of 9,000 people. It was a stadium. Okay. It was in Vegas. It was at a conference. 9,000 people, and the guy on stage, Mr. 10X himself. Mm-hmm. And he said that obscurity is your biggest problem. Obscurity, meaning people don't know you. He said, if they don't know you, they can't flow you, right? So I'm sitting in a room of 9,000 people towards the back of the stadium, you know, looking at and thinking, I don't want to be one of these 9,000. I want to be the one that makes it. So in that chair, my heart was pounding. I start thinking, I start really kind of praying in that moment. I said, I need to get out of this obscurity, and I agree with it. What do I do? And my heart was pounding so hard, I walked out of that room, walked into the hallway. There was all these vendors everywhere, and I found one of the coaches. He was a real estate coach. His name was Chris. And I walked up to him, and I said, hey, this is me. I need a coach. I need to get out of obscurity. And I paid a man $10,000 to learn what he had to download into me. And over the course of 6 months, he downloaded wisdom. He downloaded ideas. He downloaded conviction. The things he taught me about business were fine. They were great. They were useful. But the things he taught me about wisdom in life were far more important. That $10,000 over the course of almost 2 years turned into $740,000.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I said, wow, this is fantastic. It's the things that I learned about me. It's the things I learned about my convictions. See, we're all a byproduct of our convictions. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. That led me to another mastermind, another mentor. I paid $40,000. I made a couple million dollars from there. I joined another one. As of today, I'm over $350,000 in masterminds, mentorships, and that's USD.
Holy cow. That's a lot of money, man.
A lot of money. And I'm in a lot of different groups and communities. And what I get is the thing I mentioned earlier is awareness, which comes only through the power of proximity. When you get in somebody's airspace and you see exactly how they operate and you observe, you get fundamental truth. It's hard through a screen to know what is real and what isn't real. What's Netflix and what's real life? But when you're in direct proximity and you see the size of a man, how he speaks, how he communicates, how he drives revenue, his intelligence, when you get to observe and learn, I basically was able to observe and learn and say, hey, this is what's possible, number one. And number two, if he can do it, why not me? That's a question. If he can do it, why not me? What does he have that I don't have? And as soon as you figure out, most people don't have more than you. Most people just have more belief than you. They have more conviction than you, but they don't have more external resources than you. They have more internal conviction than you. And that conviction drives their activities, and their activities drive their outcomes. And when I realized this, I said, everything is possible. Like I walk into a podcast of the most famous podcaster in my space, and it's like a small closet. Now I'm like, this is where you do your podcast? Yeah. I thought you had a whole glamorous studio. It's not. It's Hollywood. So what I want people to realize is that getting close to people removes the Hollywood effect. It removes the special effects that you see on camera, and you see the reality. Like most of the people that I see, like Grant Cardone and some of these guys, they're short, right? They're short.
They're my height
or shorter. And I'm like, listen, if like I thought these people were 8 feet tall. I thought they were Goliath, but really they're David.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. When I first met Grant like years ago, like I believe it was 2019 in Singapore, when he was doing an event with Success Resources, I was thinking that hey, he might be super tall, probably 1'8", 1'9" around those height. But then when I met him, I said, hey, oh my God, we're almost probably he's slightly taller than me by a bit. And I was like, oh wow, he's and I met Jared, I met Alina, I met the whole Cardones and the whole team. And I was like, wow, it was a really special effect that there's like there's no Hollywood effect like what you mentioned. Like it just removes it. It makes you feel more personable. It makes you feel more homely to him and his family, and it's not so it's not like what many fans would say, like, oh wow, he must be very arrogant or whatever, and on camera he's super confident and whatnot, but when you're meeting him in person, it's the mindset of this person would have changed it, and it has made me think that hey, wow, he's really nice and friendly. He's not so, big and boastful and whatever. He's superbly, genuinely amazing person. Like what you mentioned, right?
Most successful people are. I just think it's important to remember there's the Hollywood veneer and then there's the reality. Your net worth doesn't dictate your self-worth. So if you show up in a room with your self-worth and you realize that, like, I have this thing, I'm a child of God. There's nothing I can't do in this world. I'm a child of God. End of story. So there's no man that's better than me. No woman that's better than me. There's no person on earth that's better than you. Nobody is more worthy. Nobody is more deserving than you. We all have worth. All of us were created in his image. So we all have worth. If you remember that you have worth, there is nothing you can't do. Now, does that mean that that other person hasn't failed more and tried more and lived with more conviction and approached more? Sure. I have friends that have $1 billion worth of real estate, a billion with a B. And they're not any more deserving than you are, or myself, or anybody else. I have other people that are broke and they're great humans too. It's not about how much money you have. Now, money helps. Money creates more opportunity, more things, more. There's more you can do with more money. It's a resource like time. It's the same thing. You have a lot of time, then you can do a lot of things. You have a lot of money, you can do a lot of things. They're all resources. But you internally need to realize that the greatest resource is inside of you, being able and willing to understand that you are worthy and you're created for greatness. You're not created for mediocrity. And that's there's power in that, because with that, you can create time and money. But if you don't have that internal, you chase everything looking for it every day. And most people never end up finding it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I agree. It's just like what Tony Robbins has famously said about resources. It's not so much about the resources that you have or don't have. It's about how resourceful you are, sense, right?
Yeah. Resourcefulness is such a powerful, powerful tool. Now, as immigrants, I'm an immigrant, right? So for me, resourcefulness is a birthright. Like, we have to have it. We have to have it to find a way. Like, this is my third language, right? My dad is English is his fourth or fifth language. We have to become resourceful people. That's one of the greatest gifts I got from my father, is becoming resourceful. And I think that people who don't have resourcefulness are at a massive disadvantage.
I agree with you on that. And you know, nowadays we are so hyped up by this thing called a hustle culture, right? So can you share with us, like, what's the difference between working hard and building a business, in a sense?
What a great question. I think everybody works hard. The person who makes minimum wage and the person who flips houses and makes a lot of money, or the executive, they all work hard. Hard work isn't the answer. It's one formula. Working smart. You know, I bought the narrative when I was younger about being a hustler and a grinder and this and that and all these adjectives that don't sound very fun. But the problem with working hard is that you work in a small little perspective and you're just going around and round and round and round. I believe that working in your business is fine, but there has to be moments of clarity which only come from working on your business. You need to get outside of your business, gain perspective, and find a better way. Working smart is the pinnacle. It has to be smart. It has to be smarter. It has to be better. Working hard just isn't enough. Today, I work less hours than you think. I don't work a lot of hours, but I work very smart. I use the resources I have. I use people. I use technology. I use capital, right? Where I don't want to work, my money is like soldiers. I send my money into battle. They fight and they capture other soldiers. That's called a return. It's an ROI. We have to use the dollars to go and capture more dollars. So it is so imperative that at some point in your life, if you're a hustler, entrepreneur, small business owner, grinder, whatever the case is, there are fundamental business growth principles that you have to understand. The leverage, the use of capital, the use of human capital, which is called labor, the use of intelligence, the use of technology. We used to live in the information, in the industrial age. Today we live in the information age. So information is power. Information is a shortcut. If you don't access it, and you're just operating from an industrial way of thinking and operating a business, well, then I think you're at a massive disadvantage. So every single business owner Listen, before this pandemic thing, back in, when I remember in 99, they were going to have this big blackout, right? Remember in 2000, the big blackout that was supposed to happen? It didn't happen, right? I remember being in church and we were praying and like it just didn't happen. And then we had 20 years. You had, that was a foreshadowing. That blackout, the technology blackout, was a foreshadowing to the pandemic. You had 20 years to get your business into modern times. You had 20 years to get your business into a technology advancement. And then instantly, in the middle of a pandemic, everything goes virtual, right? Everything from real estate, legal processes, to this, crypto becomes more prevalent. All of these online things happen because we realized that the industrial age was dead. And you had 20 years to catch up. So the businesses that closed, they failed to see the warnings. They failed to see that technology had to become a part, integrated in what you did. You had to use information to your advantage. So I believe that working better and smarter is the only way to work. Otherwise, I don't think it's work. I just think it's a rat race. It's a hamster wheel that you're going on. It's not productive. Busyness does not equal productivity. Stop wasting your life. Stop wasting your life. Focus on productivity.
Yep, totally. And how to actually be more productive is through outsourcing, right? One of the ways I'm pretty sure you outsource, like you mentioned, you use technology, you use people, you use other things and even money to win the war and get the money into your war chest in a sense.
Well, this isn't hard. Like, listen, if you deserve $100 an hour because you have a service or a product, but then you're doing a bunch of $10 an hour jobs in between that $100 an hour job, you just gave yourself a pay decrease. Your job as an entrepreneur, business owner, is to constantly give yourself a pay increase. So other people have to do the things that are less valuable in the marketplace. The $20 jobs have to go to people willing to do them for $20. But most business owners are so obsessed with control that they want to do everything themselves, and they never graduate to a real business owner because they become the technician. They become the technical person in every area of their company. They work for $10 and $100, and that's the problem. We have to get rid of the low-level jobs, and you have to create real jobs in the marketplace where other people can go, entry-level jobs, and can do that work for you. That's the economics machine for me.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, speaking of money and, you know, I actually watched your YouTube video the other day, and I noticed that there's this interesting video with a headline saying that, you know, this 4 steps to making $1 million quick. So I watched that video and I find it very interesting, and I thought we could actually bring it into this episode as well. So Ben, can you share with us, like, what are the 4 steps to making $1 million quick?
Well, there's a few different ways to do this. There's those 4 steps, another 3 steps. Like, that was one video. So I'll give you what I think are the 4 steps. Number one, build a skill. Build a skill that pays you more than the one that you're doing right now. And if you don't know what that skill is, you need to find an industry that has a higher pay rate than the industry that you're in. For me, for example, real estate investing, one skill could be sales and negotiations of real estate deals. So build that skill. Find a skill, build that skill. Number two, participate in that activity. So we have to participate. Like, if it's me, I'm going to stop working at the grocery store. I'm going to learn real estate negotiations and offer making as a skill. And then I'm going to start making offers. Participate in that. Participate, participate, participate. Number three, repeat. Number four, once you've done all three of those, it's learn to leverage capital. If you can leverage capital, know how to negotiate deals, and you're making offers every day, you can go from making $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 to $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, $100,000. So I think that's the quick and easy way for people to instantly build something of greater value. Making $1 million isn't hard. It's the same 40 hours a week. It's just the activity and the rate of pay that you're going to make along the way.
Wow. Love it, love it, love it. Well, when you said it, my eyes were like, whoa, glowing. I was like, oh wow, this is good. This is really great, solid advice that I'm pretty sure you guys should listen and practice this. And as we are actually coming to the end of this interview, I have one last question for you. And I'm pretty sure you have gone through this before. You would have no problems in achieving this again or overcoming this again. So, Ben, imagine this, right? You suddenly lose everything, your money, your name, your reputation. So what will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
I would lean on the highest paid skill that I have. If it's sales, I would lean on sales. I'd find a product that makes sense in this marketplace and I would instantly start selling. Like, that's exactly what I would do. So for me, it'd be real estate. There's always a need for housing, always. Whether I'm selling housing, fixing and flipping housing, renting the properties out, I would lean on my real estate experience. I think the default income to anybody is your lowest skill set, which is why I'm such a believer in growing your skills. For me, leadership as a skill, leverage as a skill, let's say negotiations as a skill, money management as a skill. These are all super important things in life to know and understand. So I would instantly start selling products that are needed. There's always a product that's needed in the marketplace. And if you're a person with conviction, like I am, you can always sell. So that's what I would start doing instantly, is find that product, start selling.
Awesome. Awesome. Wow. Wow. Nice. And I really love what you have mentioned. Leverage on the highest paid skill set that you have. And then, you know, and one of it is selling, for example, and just keep working on it and just keep selling and selling and selling. And I'm pretty sure you are able to get there as well. And wow. Thank you so much for what an amazing interview that we have. Like, it's truly inspiring, amazing golden nuggets that you've shared with all of us. I really appreciate you. So Ben, where can my followers find you on social media?
Yeah, so best place is website humble.ceo or Ben Humble on Instagram.
Awesome, awesome. All right, so with that, I would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in to this amazing episode of The Regency Show. And stay tuned for more amazing guests from the 10X Stage Agency that we have, really grateful to be partnering up with. And of course, I would like to thank this amazing lady for introducing you guys, Erin Pablo. Thank you so much for, you know, introducing Ben and all the other amazing guests that's coming on board as well. And with that, I would like to say good night and good day from Singapore, and see you soon. Take care and bye-bye. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Regency Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment, and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called The Regency Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right. So with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of The Regency Show.